If you wanted to put a kind of title on this, then I guess the title that's up there, Pretending with God, would be a good one. Or you could put, Don't just act Christian, be Christian. I'll say it again, Don't just act Christian, be Christian. If ever there was a message for the people of God in the 21st century, then the message of the book of Hosea would undoubtedly be it. We've mentioned the storyline before, but it will do well for us just at the end of a busy summer to take stock for a moment of who we are. For those young people that have been on camp or beach missions, for those families or adults who found the whole exercise of church a strain in the holiday season, and that counts most of us, I guess. For all of us, before we set out on the activity of this academic term ahead, and thereby somehow, because we have families, a kind of church term ahead, if you'll forgive me putting it like that. For all of us, let's hear the word of God and make sure that we know where we stand and what he's done for us. Ironically, perhaps, when the question is asked, well, what is Hosea about? And I say, don't just act Christian, be Christian. Ironically, this book is actually the account of an acted out marriage. It's a real marriage, real enough, but this prophet Hosea is acting out the model of the marriage between God and his people, the love that God has for his people. It's an acted out marriage. Hosea and an unfaithful woman he's been told to marry called Gomer. So what we have before us here is actually the story of a broken relationship. It's a horrible story, actually, and one that I think is really quite shocking to even our pluralistic and anything goes culture. What we have in front of us is really a shocking story. You see, according to verse 1, it took place during the reign of Uzziah and Jotham and Ahaz and Hezekiah, who were, according to verse 1 of chapter 1 of the book of Hosea, kings of Judah, and during the reign of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel. That was, if you have any knowledge of Old Testament history at all, and if you don't, well, let me tell you, it was a time of great upheaval and sad religious pluralism. A kind of anything goes was the order of the day. And if you wanted to worship the Lord, that's absolutely fine. Everybody was perfectly happy with you worshipping the Lord. There's a jolly great temple stood in Jerusalem that you couldn't get away from if you were anywhere near it anyway. But you needn't worry too much about what he says was the right way to worship him. Just turn back with me very briefly to 2 Kings chapter 15. We won't keep doing this, but just to get a flavour for where things were at. 2 Kings 15, page 271, and verse 1 and 2. Verse 1, in the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, or Uzziah, if you prefer, it's the same word, same name, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 16 years old when he became, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 52 years. His mother's name was Jechaliah, and she was from Jerusalem. So if you're interested in Old Testament history, you can kind of pin this guy down precisely. Look at verse 3, though. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Amaziah had done. So that kind of bodes well, doesn't it? The implication is, hey, this guy was okay, he was after God. But verse 4, the high places, however, were not removed. And the people continued to offer sacrifices and burn incense there. God had said, worship me this way in Jerusalem, with the temple, with these particular sacrifices. But in a day where anything goes, people kind of did what they wanted. Jotham was just like his father. But when it came to Ahaz on chapter 16, if you just keep your finger open there, you find things were a bit different. Verse 2 of chapter 16 of 2 Kings, in Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 16 years. Unlike David, his father, in other words, his ancestor, He did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, and even sacrificed his son in the fire, following the detestable ways of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He offered sacrifices and burned incense at the high places, on the hilltops, and under every spreading tree. The whole concept of knowing God in this nation had progressively deteriorated during Hosea's time there. People had started by kind of ignoring Jerusalem, ignoring the Bible, and ignoring what God said, and had done their own thing at the high places. And it had rapidly deteriorated till kind of everybody was doing whatever they wanted, and even the king was sacrificing his kids in the fire. People say in our own day, you know, it's ever so bold of us to go to pagan countries and pagan jungle situations and try to impose a knowledge of God, the God of the Bible. That's a bit much, isn't it? It's really not fair to kind of introduce them to Christianity. To which I want to say, well, do you think it's right to worship God by the sacrifice of people? Because that's where it will end. That is where it ended for Ahaz. That is where what has happened all across the world. And as people say, oh, well, you've imposed Western culture on different nations, the cultural element is clearly wrong. But a right worship of God is obviously right. This deterioration in these people in Hosea's day, 700 or 800 years before Jesus was born, is not just a function of the king's example. It was a factor in practically everybody's point of view. The Bible could not be clearer, could it? Unlike the so-called gods of the nations, the Lord is knowable. That's good news. It's good news that they recognized that God was knowable. Even Ahaz recognized, bad as he was, that God was knowable. But people would just shrug their shoulders and say, well, God can be known. And like so many people, maybe even people who are professing Christians today, knowing him may be fine, but let him be known at my convenience. Let him be known as I want to, when I want to, how I want to. So the Bible may be clear, but I don't really need to take too much notice of the Bible, because after all, it's an old book. And even though there was a great reversal and revival when King Hezekiah arrived in 2 Kings 18, at the end of Hosea's time, yet still Hosea is speaking into a situation in which most of the time anything goes. Providing God has a place, it doesn't really matter what place he occupies in your life. That was the message to the people of Hosea in his day. And actually it is exactly the same as the professing people of God in our own day, apparently. Where a vast percentage of our own country in the UK would claim to be Christian, by whatever that means. God has a place, for many people a small place, but it doesn't matter what place he occupies in your life. So Hosea is told by God that his life is going to be an acted out version of what the people are doing to God. And it's a horrible act that he has to perform. Hosea, you've got to model a situation, says God, point number one, with an unfaithful partner. Just look at Hosea chapter 1 with me. And verse 1. Verse 2. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go take to yourself an adulterous wife and children of unfaithfulness, because the land is guilty of the vilest adultery in departing from the Lord. Poor old Hosea. I don't imagine his life as a prophet, he was expecting to turn out quite like that. Go find somebody who will sleep around, says God. Maybe marry a prostitute who will continue with her prostitution. And you are going to be, for all the people, the man of God who will set the example of what is going on here. Now, I don't know about what you think, but actually, if you looked at the situation carefully, you're going to spot a problem. You see, the people might well argue, but just wait a minute, we haven't departed from the Lord. Sacrifices are still being offered at God's altar in Jerusalem. Sure, sacrifices are still being offered at the high places, and we may not kind of be getting it right, but at least we're trying. We haven't departed from the look. Look, there's plenty of sacrificing, plenty of so-called worship going on, plenty of acknowledgement of God in the land. How can you say the land is guilty of the vilest adultery in departing from the Lord? But poor old Hosea has been commanded to live out what it's like to be married to an unfaithful wife. And the people believe they're being faithful, for they worship and sacrifice to the Lord well enough. But God says that his view of the way the people are treating him, his view of the relationship with he has with his people, is not one of faithfulness at all. He says, knowing you as my people, having you in the promised land, seeing you as the ones who come to the temple and sacrifice your offerings and go to the high places where I've told you not to go and sacrifice your offerings, having you as the people who talk about me and tell me to the other nations, having you as the people who apparently stand as the people of God in the world that is broken. What it's like being married to a woman who sleeps around. Like being married to someone who behaves like they're married to lots of other people, as the children would understand it. Who treats that marriage as a license to do as they please rather than a promise to be kept and protected. And this morning, you know, you and I need to ask ourselves just a very straight question. Is our view of our relationship with God simply a secure platform from which to see the world, or a loving relationship with the God of the universe who we long to honor? Because for the people in Hosea's day, they simply saw the worship of God in the temple in Jerusalem as an anchor point from which they could do whatever they liked, however they liked, whenever they liked, with whoever they liked. An unfaithful partner is what they were. And to that unfaithful partner, Hosea's job was to bring an upsetting message. To get the message home, Gomer, Hosea's wife, has three children, each of whom bring a kind of lived message to the people of the land. Notice, will you, that the Bible refers to them as Hosea's, as Gomer's children. When you have a wife who sleeps around, you can't be sure whose children they are. So they're called Gomer's children right the way through the book. And each one of these children had a different name. I don't know whether you remember, if you were here a couple of years ago when we were looking in Genesis, the names of the children bore a message. So if you turn back to, we won't for sake of time, but if you turn back to the early chapters of Genesis, then you find that Isaac, for example, means laughter. And Isaac meant laughter because when the angel of the Lord came to Isaac's mum and dad and said, you're going to have a baby in a year's time, Isaac's mum, Sarah, laughed and mocked God and said, you can't be serious, I'm an old woman. And so for the rest of her life, once Isaac was born, Isaac bore this message every time she called him in the camp, Isaac, she's reminded, I mocked God. It's the wrong thing to do. Isaac, that's what his name meant. Jacob meant, Jacob was called Jacob because his name means something like grasper. And that's exactly what he did. He was born with his twin Esau, grasping at Esau's heel. And that's exactly what it was like the rest of his life. Well, for the first half of his life, he was a grasper. He was a trickster. He was somebody that constantly tried to undermine until God dealt with him and he got his name renamed Israel. So the names of these children born to Gomer in Hosea's time each had a name that bore a message. The first is found in chapter 1 and verse 4. Read it with me. The Lord said to Hosea, call this son, call him Jezreel, because I will soon punish the house of Jehu for the massacre at Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of Israel. He's named Jezreel to remind the people of the fury of Jehu, who was a former king of Israel. When he killed Joram and Amaziah and Jezebel and 70 sons of Ahab in the city of Jezreel. It's all to do with some past history that we're not going to go into right now. But even though Jehu was doing what God had said, he was reckless and impetuous and proud. And when God says in verse 5 of this book that he will therefore break the bow of Israel, what he means is that he's going to still Israel's spirit. She's unfaithful and violent and treacherous. And actually the message of this first child is, you're sinful, Israel. You don't do what I say, you do what you want. This guy Jezreel walked around bearing that name for the rest of his life, Israel's sin, if you will. And Gomer had a second child. And the second son born to Gomer isn't much better. This is a daughter, verse 6 of chapter 1. Gomer conceived again and gave birth to a daughter. The Lord said to Hosea, call her Ruhamah. And if you look at the subnote in your Bible there, Lo Ruhamah means not loved or no compassion. Why? Well, for I will no longer show love to the house of Israel, that I should at all forgive them. Yet I will show love to the house of Judah, and I will save them, not by bow or sword or battle, but by horses and horsemen, but by the Lord their God. The message of Lo Ruhamah is that God's love and compassion will come to an end, and he will reject Israel as his people. There is a point of no return, you see. So the second child, a daughter, stands for the end of God's patience. Number one is the sin. Number two is God's patience. Verse 8, after she'd weaned Lo Ruhamah, Gomer had another son. And the Lord said, call him Lo Ami. Lo Ami means not my people, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. So this third child, Lo Ruhamah, not my people, means no more knowing God. Remember, these kids grew up at the time of Uzziah and Jotham, and more to the point at the time of Ahaz. And as Hosea and presumably Gomer called them to dinner or took them to school or went out to play with them in the street or whatever else they did, all the time these names echoed across the neighborhood. Israel is sinning! Time for dinner! Can you imagine? You are not loved! Come and tidy your room. Not my people. Wash your hands. Come and do the washing up. All the time. They'd be in the equivalent of the supermarket or the market. And that's what they would call them all the way. And everybody knew that Hosea was a prophet. And everybody heard God's condemnation. I don't love you anymore. You're not my people anymore. Look at your sinfulness now. Look at what you're doing and how you're treating me. And everybody knew that Hosea was married to a woman who was not faithful to him. And everybody knew what kind of a woman that Gomer was. And everybody knew that the message of Hosea was, stop pretending with God. And nobody took any notice. If you jump ahead to the chapter we read earlier on in chapter 6, then you see some sense of what is going on here. Chapters 1 to 3 really cover the book of Hosea. If you, at some other time, maybe later on, we're going to read most of it now, but later on this afternoon, if you want to kind of master Hosea in your own thinking, then just read chapters 1 to 3 and you'll get a good picture of what's going on. Chapters 4 through to the end are really a record of Hosea's different preaching to the people of the land. He didn't simply have an adulterous wife. He had things to say as well on God's behalf. And here in chapter 6, there's really rather a good summary of what's going on. I said at the beginning that we don't know whether this is Hosea pleading with the people or whether this is the people kind of paying lip service to God. But pick up chapter 6 again and verse 1. Come, either says he or say they. Let us return to the Lord. He's torn us to pieces, but he will heal us. He's injured us, but he will bind up our wounds. And after 2 days he'll revive us, and on the third day he'll restore us, that we may live in his presence. Let us acknowledge the Lord. Let us press on to acknowledge him. As surely as the sun rises, he will appear, and he will come to us as the winter rains, like the spring rains that water the earth. As surely as the sun rises, what does that mean? It means we can count on God God's not going to give up on us. Hey, we may have these kids around us whose names are, you're not loved and I'm abandoning you and so on. But it's okay. As surely as the sun rises, he's going to appear and so on. But God's response is the same. And God's response is, he's using Ephraim as a kind of handle on the whole nation. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears. It's like being married to somebody who's so changeable that they... So I send you my prophets, he says in verse 5, and I cut you to pieces, not literally, though that's coming, but with words. And I killed you with the words of my mouth, and my judgment flashed upon you. Why? Because I desire mercy, not sacrifice. An acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings. You see, the fact is that these so-called people of God were simply play-acting. Oh, they did the right things. They offered their worship. They went to the sacrifices. They talked the talk. But that's all they did. They would go to the temple early in the morning. They would make their sacrifices. They would get themselves right with God, and then they'd go off and live as if he didn't care and was not there, and as if they were not his people at all. And that's why, actually, the earlier part of chapter 6, we're not clear who's saying it. Maybe it's Hosea pleading with them, or maybe it's just the people saying, hey, let's acknowledge God, let's press on to acknowledge him, because as surely as the sun rises, he's going to appear again anyway. And God says, you guys, you're just like the morning mist. You blow hot and cold, never knowing whether you love me or not. They did all the right things. They talked the talk. But it had no impact on their lives, as God had no devotion from them. One of the reasons I said we're looking at this book today is because we're going to see Jesus applying that particular verse, in fact, in the New Testament next week. And the question that it poses is a stark one for you and me. Who are we like? In marriage, it's a stark thing to pretend. People notice. You will know if you're pretending. But when it comes to God, actually, it's very easy, kind of on the surface, to pretend, isn't it? If you come to church regularly, and I know it can be very difficult to find a church when you're away on holiday, we find the same. But tell me, when you're on holiday, are you on holiday from God? Some of you youngsters, you've been to camp this week. Are you just a nice Christian when everyone is looking at you? What about when the leaders are not looking? Are you a nice Christian then? Or actually, are you just pretending? Likewise with beach missions, or maybe those of us that haven't been away and are just here all the time. When you're not at church, when there aren't other Christians around, maybe just when you're on your own, are you pretending? Or do you mean it? And you know, as people living this side of the cross, we have the privilege and opportunity to know God that the people of Hosea's day simply could only dream of. Peter says in his first letter, the Apostle Peter says in his first letter at the end of the New Testament, even angels long to look into these things. See, you and I sit in a position, unlike Hosea, where we don't have to go to a temple to worship God. Hey, we don't even need to come to church to worship God. That's why it doesn't matter that we kind of hold our gatherings in a school hall. It'd be nice to have our own building, wouldn't it? Because it'd be a lot more convenient. But actually, we don't need it. It's not a question of buildings. It's a question of knowing God together. You don't even need to do that. You and I have individual access to the God of the universe every day, all the time. Unlike Hosea, we can know what it is to be forgiven. We don't have to bring sacrifices. Jesus is the sacrifice for our sin. We don't have to go through the procedures that they had to go through. They could only dream of knowing God in that way. You and I have free access to God in that way. But still, all the easier maybe to pretend. Some of us, 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Cheltenham Bible Festival, and we heard Don Carson, a theologian, there, but speaking in a different setting. He spoke about Hosea and said, a generation that lustily sings praises to God, whilst at the same time lustily sleeping around, had better expect the blistering judgment of God. Because that's what he's promising these people. Just cast your eye across chapter 4. Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites. Because the Lord has a chance to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God. There is only cursing and lying and murder and stealing and adultery. They break all bounds. And in the New Testament you could say, at least in their heads. And bloodshed follows bloodshed. And because of this, the land mourns, and all who live in it waste away. Verse 6, because you have rejected knowledge, I also reject you as my priests, says God to those who should know better. Verse 8, they feed on the sins of my people and relish their wickedness. Verse 10, they will eat but not have enough. They will engage in prostitution but not increase, because they have deserted the Lord and given themselves to prostitution, and so on. They sacrifice, verse 13, on the mountaintops. Verse 14, I will punish your daughters. Verse 15, though you commit adultery, which is what God says is what it's like having people who will worship anything including him, and so on. God knows when we are pretending, and he will call us to account one day. But that's not the last word. Hosea wasn't simply told to marry a woman who was and certainly became a prostitute and slept around and was thoroughly unfaithful. And it's not the last word, because the relationship is based, from God's point of view, on an unconditional love. Just look again at chapter 1 and 2. Chapter 1 from verse 10 show that these judgments are not the last word. You see, despite the judgment, which eventually did come some years later, yet God says, as a promise, a long-term promise, chapter 1 and verse 10, yet the Israelites will be like the sand on the seashore. Well, that's not a sign of a people who have been destroyed, which cannot be measured or counted. In the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, well, they will be called the sons of the living God. Why? Well, because chapter 3 records what Hosea had to do. His wife had abandoned him for her lovers. The 3 children born to unfaithfulness had gone by the board. And eventually this woman ends up in a slave market, stripped and bare and ready for whoever wants to buy her to do as they will. And Hosea chapter 3, we read, the Lord said to me, go, Hosea, show your love to your wife again. Though she is loved by another and is an adulteress, love her as the Lord loves the Israelites. Though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes, so I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethic of barley in the slave market. Then I told her, you're to live with me for many days. You must not be a prostitute or intimate with any man, and I will live with you. For the Israelites will live for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or idol. And afterwards the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they will come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last days. And that, of course, has been fulfilled in Jesus. You see, in the midst of God's judgment on his people is mercy. In the face of their defilement is his love. And in spite of their rejection, his redemption, as he buys her back. Imagine Hosea standing in that slave market, how he must have felt to this woman standing there for all to see, lewd and appalling, beaten and broken. But he pays for her and takes her home to love her with a love that will not die. And the great news for you and me today, as we stand this side of the cross and look back at Hosea 700 years before Jesus was born, so God promises a time will come when you will turn to me and be blessed. So you and I look back at that time when Jesus came and we can be blessed. The great news for you and me today, as we're confronted by God's outrageous love in the face of our outrageous sinfulness and self-centeredness, is that in Jesus, God loves us just like that. So again, Peter can write to the New Testament church in his first letter and say to them, just turn with me to 1 Peter 1, page 859. He says to them, verse 18, you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ. God is, as it were, standing in the slave market, what the New Testament calls slavery to sin, an empty way of life that lives in a broken, pluralistic world, doing whatever we want, however we want, treating God as if he is not there. And it is as if God stands in that slave market and sees us in all our degradation and pays for us to take us home. But unlike Hosea, who paid, what did we read, with 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethic of barley, whatever that means, God pays for us with the precious blood of Christ. That's what it cost for us to be redeemed, bought back, forgiven. And so the context of Peter's words actually come back to our idea of, are you pretending or do you mean it? He says to these Christians who should already know that they have been bought with such a thing as the precious blood of Christ, he says in verse 13, therefore, on the basis of all that God has done, prepare your minds for action. Be self-controlled. Set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy because I am holy. Since you call on a Father who judges each man's work impartially, live your lives here as strangers in reverent fear. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. The question you and I need to tackle this morning is the question that really the whole Bible poses. Is Jesus Christ Lord or not to you? He is Lord, but is he Lord to you or not? And if you're not a Christian this morning, then the answer is, why on earth will you stay standing in a slave market, enslaved to an empty way of life which is going nowhere and will end up ultimately only in God's judgment and hell, when Jesus has died for you so that you may be bought back and forgiven and loved with a love that is so utterly unconditional? And if you are a Christian this morning, then for you and me the question is, well, will we pretend or will we mean it? Will we hanker after that empty way of life? Or will we live it out, which is what Hosea was calling God's people to do? Let's do the latter.